Welcome to the Women's Wellness Psychiatry Podcast. I'm so glad you're here. I'm your host, Anna Glazer, MD, a reproductive and integrative psychiatrist here to help you make sense of the complex world of women's mental health. If your goal is to improve your emotional well-being, find fulfillment, and feel like your best self, you're in the right place. Welcome, my listener friends. It's International Women's Day when I record this podcast. This is a day to reflect on the social, economic, cultural, and political achievements of women around the world. And I think it's an opportunity to reflect on both advancements and setbacks in terms of women's equity and equality. One recent advancement that I think is great is that France just added the right to abortion to their constitution. Let's be like France. Unfortunately, on the other side of that spectrum is Alabama, which has decided to declare embryos children and thereby halted all IVF and fertility treatment in that state due to concerns about the implications of providing IVF treatment to patients and the potential legal ramifications of that. That's still an ongoing situation. And here's another advancement, which isn't as new, is that medical school classes are now about 50% women in most places. And this was the case for my class, and I went to school back in the early to mid-2000s. Female physicians are important for many reasons, but one is because of how women identifying patients are often treated in the medical community. So there are four topics related to mental and medical health that I want to talk about in this podcast episode, because these have been really just top of mind for me in the context of some of the patients that I've been seeing recently. And those four topics that I want to touch on briefly in this episode that I think have opportunities for ongoing improvements and advancements are the role of pain and managing pain for women, postpartum depression, the lack of information and discussion about hormonal health, and the issue of imposter syndrome for female physicians. Now, the first topic is pain indifference. And that's that women identifying patients tend to be more overlooked in terms of pain management, or their pain concerns are more often dismissed. And I see this with my own patients who have conditions like endometriosis, fibromyalgia, or others that are harder to assess and manage compared to, for example, a simple broken bone or a kidney stone. There are also a number of different kinds of situations when a woman is getting a particular procedure, pain management isn't as readily offered to her. And this can happen with things like IUD placements, LEAP procedures, or even something as simple as a PAP. One of the things that can be challenging when you're experiencing pain is that it's really difficult to advocate for yourself. And this is actually one reason that I often recommend a doula for many of my birthing parents. When you're in pain, it can be extra hard to advocate for your needs. And there's also data that poorly managed pain in childbirth can actually increase the risk of postpartum depression. And a plan for pain management is part of what I discuss with all of my third trimester patients. And that doesn't just mean pain medication. There are many other ways to manage pain. And this goes really beyond just the patients who are planning for a labor and delivery experience. I think it's really important for all medical professionals to be very mindful not to dismiss the pain of the patients that are in front of them, particularly when those patients might be female identifying because of the data regarding those kinds of dismissals. The second theme that I mentioned is the issue of postpartum depression. And again, there's been so much advocacy and advancement in the assessment, screening, and treatment and management of postpartum depression. This is a condition that we know affects at least 1 in 5 individuals. And yet, there are still so many women who are underdiagnosed, undiagnosed, who may not even be familiar that the symptoms that they are experiencing are postpartum depression, or perhaps perinatal depression, which is depression or anxiety symptoms that can start during the pregnancy, because there's a misconception that it's something that only happens to women postpartum. And so again, it can get missed. And that means that there's missed opportunities for treatment and for support. And incidentally, treatment doesn't just have to be medications. There are so many different kinds of treatment tools out there for managing perinatal and postpartum mood and anxiety conditions. If you are a clinician and you're interested in learning more about all of these non-conventional treatment tools, I would highly encourage you to join me at the Online Fellowship in Reproductive and Integrative Psychiatry, where we delve into all of these different kinds of tools. And in fact, I'm going to be giving a webinar for those interested, specifically on what is integrative psychiatry, how to apply it to women's mental health, the role of inflammation in mental health, and a particularly valuable treatment tool, which is the use of omega-3 fish oil. If you're interested in signing up for that free webinar or learning more about this online course, please go to psychiatryfellowship.com to learn more. So we've talked about the issue of pain and pain indifference. We've talked about postpartum depression and that we need to continue to work towards better screening, better education, and better treatment and management. The third important piece that I wanted to share with you today, where there's opportunity for growth and advancement, is the lack of information and discussion about women's hormonal health. And I've been seeing many more patients who are in early perimenopause, which is a condition that can start as early as the late 30s or early 40s for many women, but doesn't really get talked about. It's not really even top of mind for many women until perhaps they're seeing their 50s. And so there's a lot of women out there who might be struggling with symptoms and not necessarily recognizing them as perimenopausal, in part because perhaps cycles are still regular. But just because you have a regular menstrual cycle doesn't mean that you might not be experiencing symptoms of perimenopause, cognitive challenges, mood lability, sleep disturbances that really impact your functioning and quality of life. So I think that's one area where there's a lot of room for advancement, is more discussion about hormonal health, particularly in the context of perimenopause. And the fourth and final topic that I want to mention today is the issue of imposter syndrome with female physicians. There's some really interesting data that suggests that levels of imposter syndrome differ by gender. There was a KPMG study that found that 75% of executives who are women, who self-identify as women, have doubted themselves during their career. I'll include a link to that particular paper in the show notes. And then there was another British survey conducted by Galaxy of about 4,000 respondents that found that, in contrast to that, more than half of men have never experienced the phenomenon. That's a really interesting distinction. Now, both of those groups were not necessarily medical professionals or physicians. Generally speaking, the majority of these individuals were in various kinds of business careers. But I think this is something that is particularly important to think about in the context of medical personnel and female physicians, because it's something that I see so often in many of my female physician patients, and something that I discuss with them in the context of our sessions. And there was an interesting study published on imposter syndrome that took place just a couple of years ago, which I'll also link. And it talked about the possibility of including imposter syndrome actually in the DSM, which is the manual of diagnoses that's used by mental health professionals, because this has become a much more widespread phenomenon. And they really talk about a rather robust literature that connects imposter syndrome feelings with things like job performance and job satisfaction and burnout among various populations, including healthcare professionals. And we know that in the context both of the pandemic and many other recent stressors, there have been physicians who are leaving medicine in droves, and particularly female physicians. So going back to what we started to talk about in the very beginning, the med school classes, which are currently 50-50, that's fantastic. But what happens down the line when there are a lot of female physicians who are actually leaving medicine? Where does that leave our patients, particularly in the context of some of the other three major topics that I just discussed? Pain management, postpartum and perinatal depression, and hormonal health. This is a really big issue. And so in that particular 2020 systematic review, they looked at over 60 different studies that looked at imposter syndrome and showed prevalence rates that ranged anywhere from 56 to 82%. They talked a lot about different psychological symptoms associated with imposter syndrome, things like anxiety and depression, burnout, exhaustion, avoidance behaviors, and an inability to kind of take in positive feedback. And they really spoke about how the fact that this syndrome, yes, it can happen really with anyone across any age group or gender or profession or other kinds of racial or ethnic demographics, but it did suggest that individuals from minoritized groups may be more likely to experience it because of either racism or social stigmas or microaggressions. So there's some really interesting literature that's coming out on this topic of imposter syndrome. And there are many different ways, in my opinion, to address this phenomenon at very different levels. There's sort of macro societal levels, more micro interpersonal levels, and then there's levels within the individual. And another theme that I've been reflecting upon recently is how language matters and impacts how we talk and think about things. It's interesting when we think about certain words and phrases. You may have heard plenty of times words like mom guilt, but we don't hear a lot about dad guilt. And we hear the phrase working mother, but we don't often hear the phrase working father. And I think it's interesting to think about, well, what do these phrases connote when they're used so ubiquitously in the general society and population that suggests that individuals who are working and who also are mothers, they should feel guilty? Is that sort of what's being perpetuated by using that kind of phrasing? The fact that that phrase exists and is used so commonly almost suggests that this is something that should exist because it's in our language. I listened to a really interesting TED Talk on this phenomenon recently where it really spoke about how the language that we use impacts so much of how we think. The example that they gave is how in different languages, certain nouns, for example, are either masculine or feminine in terms of their declination. An example would be the word for car in Spanish is a masculine word, whereas the word for car in Russian, for example, is a feminine word. And so when you're talking about a car in Spanish, you might describe it as very fast or strong. Whereas if you're talking about it in the Russian language, you might use words like beautiful. And so the way that we describe and talk about things because of the language that we use influences how we think about them. So going back to phrases like mom guilt and working mother, what if we began to remove those phrases from our language? Perhaps that would also help us to move away from even the existence of these kinds of concepts. So there's many ways to address this from a societal level in terms of using advocacy and voting, and perhaps on a slightly more local level in the setting of modeling or setting examples on a familial or local level. And then I think the last important piece that all of us actually have control over is the individual and internal level. So self-talk and self-worth come into play. And I actually did a podcast episode on self-worth at the very start of the season. So feel free to take a listen back to that. But I think one of the ways that we really can get some control back in terms of how we're thinking about these things is in the language that we use to talk about them and working on some of that internal sense of self-worth and confidence. I think that's something that we can definitely work on an individual level when we're talking about the imposter syndrome, as we work our way up to making those changes and advancements on a more societal level as well. So these are just some thoughts, some interesting themes that I've been reflecting on most recently, particularly in light of International Women's Day. I would love to hear your thoughts on these different concepts as well. So feel free to send me a note, to leave a review, to leave a rating for this podcast. I would love to hear from you. Thanks for joining me for this week's episode. As you know, my goal is to share with you the most helpful information that moves you towards emotional well-being. If you have suggestions or questions, I'd love to hear those. And I also always appreciate a rating that will help others find this valuable content. I'm looking forward to connecting with you again next week. Please note that while I am a clinical doctor, this podcast is not a substitute for, nor should be taken as medical advice. No specific health advice is being given on this podcast, and no physician-client relationship is created by you listening to this podcast. All information provided on this podcast is for informational purposes only.